A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 149. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about the comics based on Gerry Anderson's work. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we're talking about a long history of comic book adaptations of all the various Gerry Anderson television shows. We've got loads of great comics to look at over the years. And along the way, we'll be covering some of the sort of great creators from British comics. So there'll be a few famous names from British comics history as we go.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And we like to cover a spin-off product of a British TV series about once a year. This is really our 2012 spin-off type episode that, for one reason or another, we've delayed a little bit. It's now early 2013. But this is one of our glimpses into the world of the non-TV products that were based on some of the well-known British sci-fi shows.
And as we record, it is with a tinge of sadness because it is only a few weeks, just a month ago as we record, since Gerry Anderson actually died on Boxing Day 2012 at the age of 83. So a sad death, but it's nice to be remembering him, remembering the great shows he created and looking at these comics that were based on them.
Yes, absolutely. It was definitely a great loss for the British science fiction community, but he certainly left quite an amazing legacy, and these comics are definitely a part of that, as well as all the TV work. And there are great numbers of comics based on all sorts of shows that he did, so we will try to look at some of the highlights and summarize some of the interesting things that were around there.
Okay, so we'll pick out the bits and pieces as we go along. And of course, we begin with Gerry and Sylvia Anderson, his wife at the time, and their own production companies, originally called AP Films in the early 1960s, but becoming known as Century 21 Productions from about 1965 onwards, once they produced Thunderbirds. And as we've discussed in the past, they produced some of the classics of British science fiction, particularly in this field of children's puppet shows, or super marionation, as they referred to it, this technique whereby they worked out how to lip sync the puppet's mouth with the actors' voices. We've mentioned a few of these shows as we've gone along. They began with a Western show, Four Feather Falls, but they moved into science fiction in 1961 with a show called Supercar. And then after that, we get many other great shows, Fireball XL5, Stingray, and of course Thunderbirds, which we have covered in some of our British Invaders episodes so far.
Yes, absolutely. And they continued to refine their work with these marionettes and the model work and things they did. And later in the 60s, continued with shows like Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons and Joe 90 and the Secret Service. So lots of interesting things there. And they continued on to work with a couple of live action shows. And they wanted to create something that was a little more adult and something that was live action. And they did UFO, which broadcast in 1970 and 1971. And they also famously did Space 1999, which broadcast from 1975 to 1977.
So great shows with a great following, a sort of cult reputation. And as we've said, we've discussed many of these already. And if you're interested in finding out what we thought about Thunderbirds, Captain Scarlet, UFO or Space 1999, you can find all those episodes on our website.
Yes, we've discussed a few of these for sure. The Super Marionation shows that they were doing in the 60s really sort of created a genre and almost a medium of its own that was really quite different from other things that were around at the time.
And they were very successful. And as we've said before, they produced this sort of cross-media marketing that would become the norm for television and film in the 70s and 80s. So early on, there were comic books and toys and games and puzzles related to all their Super Marionation shows. And the Andersons were always, I think they were very sort of savvy about this sort of stuff, Brian. They were very good at seeing cross-media marketing possibilities.
Yes, absolutely. They weren't looking at it as just a TV show in isolation. They wanted to connect other things into that. And some of their earlier shows had already appeared in TV Comic, which was a well-established comic book that did TV-related things that ran from 1951 to 1984. It had featured Four Feather Falls, Supercar, and Fireball XL5, sort of the early Super Marionation shows from Jerry and Sylvia Anderson, as well as, of course, featuring all sorts of things from other shows.
Okay, so there's some Jerry Anderson shows appearing in one comic, but of course, as we can imagine, Jerry Anderson would want to do his own thing. And so in 1964, he actually approached a publishing company called City Magazines about setting up his own Century 21 comic. And it was actually Jerry Anderson himself who had the idea of making the comic look like a tabloid newspaper. So it would look like something that was reporting the events from the Anderson universe, from the Anderson shows. And it was a format that hadn't been done before in children's comics here in Britain. And in fact, he was told that it wouldn't work, that it was a daft idea. But Jerry Anderson obviously pushed on with the idea.
Yes, this was definitely something that was very different. First taking a television company and branching into comics that would be related, and then doing this sort of new format that was quite different. The preparation and editing was done by the manager they brought in for the Century 21 Publishing Company, and that was Alan Fennell. And Fennell and Anderson had another big idea, which was also something quite new, and that was to have a shared universe where all of these different Super Marionation shows that they had been doing in the 60s would take place alongside each other in the same universe, and there would be characters who could cross over and connections between them, which at that point they had not yet done with the TV shows. So that was something new they were introducing in the comics. Anderson, Fennell, and their publisher, Clive Carr, brought in as art director Dennis Hooper.
Yes, and it was Dennis Hooper who managed to recruit some of the great British comic artists at the time from the 60s. So in these comics, you'll find rather spectacular artwork from a couple of Franks. That's Frank Hampson and Frank Bellamy. Frank Bellamy, obviously famous for the Dan Dare comic book strip. Frank Hampson also worked on a reboot of Dan Dare. And certainly Hampson did a lot of work in the TV Century 21 comic. But we've also got Ron Embleton, who we talked about when we discussed Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons, because he did those rather fantastic painted images that appeared over the end credits of Captain Scarlet. And his artwork appeared in this comic book. We've also got another Frank Langford, Mike Noble, big names in British comics back in the 60s, and their artwork is here. And all of this sort of came together into what they called TV Century 21, the comic, first published on the 19th of January, 1965.
That's right. And that was actually before Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons came out by a little while. So Ron Embleton doing these paintings that were in the end credits, his getting involved may have been related to the fact that this comic book part of things was running as well. The covers had dates that were in the future, so they had dates starting with January 23rd, 2065, And the idea was that this was a newspaper from the future that was being transmitted back to us.
Yes, another fun idea for this comic. So it's a children's comic presented as a newspaper from the future, and it presents this shared universe of the Anderson shows. And as you say, Brian, some of the shows actually have first appeared or were first mentioned in the comic book before they even appeared on the TV screens. So it's interesting stuff from the mid-60s in comic books. And in the collected editions that we've been reading, Gerry Anderson tells the story himself of how they initially started a print run of 750,000 copies, which they thought was an enormous number of comics to print. But of course, the first issue sold out, and soon after they were selling about a million comics a week here in the UK. And that's quite a spectacular number for comics. The comic industry across the world has dwindled to such an extent that even now, in America, by comparison, if an American comic such as Batman sells about 100,000 copies a month, it's considered a big hit. And these British comics coming out weekly were selling about a million a week. Absolutely astonishing numbers.
Yes, it was definitely a big deal. And it was something that was rather unique, the way it was presented and tied so closely into the television programs.
Absolutely. As we've said, this sort of shared universe, this idea that in fact some of the shows would even be trailed in the comics. So we'd see the Spectrum logo and Captain Scarlet before the TV series started. And it was very successful, so successful that later on in the 60s, it would spawn two sort of spin-off or sister titles. Appropriately enough, the first one was called Lady Penelope Comic, which came out the following year, 1966, which featured, of course, the exploits and the high fashions of the aristocratic spy that we saw in Thunderbirds. And then there was also later on another Gerry Anderson show, Joe 90. So there was a Joe 90 comic briefly ran in 1969, although that wasn't such a great success. And that was later folded into the sort of TV Century sort of banner or unfolded into the same comic.
So those, as it turned out, were the more spy-related Gerry Anderson products going off on their own, as opposed to the somewhat more heavily sci-fi things of the earlier ones.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, the spy-fi as opposed to the straight sci-fi.
Now, Century TV 21 Weekly became TV 21 Comic in 1968. So at that point, while it was still part of Century 21, which was Gerry Anderson's production company, it was sort of taking on a name that was less associated with that. So it could just be TV 21, and it could cover a variety of TV shows that were not all the Gerry Anderson ones. And in fact, you did get some comics about other TV shows. They ran some Star Trek comics, and they ran Land of the Giants comics. And there was also the Dalek Chronicles series, which was probably written by Alan Fennell and David Whittaker. And that introduced a couple of images for the Daleks that would persist in the comics and other media for Doctor Who. So it was getting into that as well.
That's right. And it's a fairly famous run of comics, that the Dalek Chronicles has a very good reputation over the years, Brian.
Yes, that's right.
There's a Shane Rimmer at the British Invaders table at the convention for Big Finish, wishing you all a very good day, and I hope it's a little warmer where you are than where we are. Bye.
So, we've talked a little bit about the history and setup of this comic. We, as always, with British Invaders, we like to talk about the availability of this stuff that we're looking at. So, in particular, we have been looking at five rather wonderful printed collections of TV Century 21 comics, which have been put together and edited by the comics historian Chris Bentley. And they are rather beautiful, sort of large format books. As I say, there's been five of them so far. They have managed to reproduce a lot of the original art. So some of the artwork is from the actual comics itself, but a lot of it has been reproduced from the original art boards, which had been thought to have been lost, but were found in the Century 21 archive. So for the first time, we're seeing some of this stuff reproduced as it was intended by the artists.
Which gives you some very good looking color and art that sort of is beyond the level of quality you might expect for 1960s comic book artwork, which is really what we're talking about for this.
Absolutely, and some of it is very beautiful stuff. The collections are mostly color, although there are some black and white strips in there as well. And it includes examples from all the Super Mario Nation shows that we've been talking about, apart from the very early ones. So there's no Supercar, there's no Four Feather Falls. But there are some of the spin-offs. So we've got Lady Penelope comics in there. And then later on, we get some UFO comics as well. Now, the collections, the first two volumes, unfortunately, may be out of print already, although you can still get them from various sellers on Amazon. And they are running for prices of between £9 to £25 on Amazon. You might be better off looking at volumes 3 and 4, which are still listed as in print on Amazon. They're paperback. They are volume 3 currently at £12.74 and volume 4 currently £11.99. And then we've got volume 5, which is a hardcover at the moment. I think Chris Bentley has switched publisher because there was a bit of a gap and it looked like there wasn't going to be any more collections. But we have got volume 5. That is currently at about £15.99. As I say, that's a hardcover volume. And we are promised a 6th volume later on in 2013, towards the end of the year.
And each volume you can look at on its own. So you can jump in with volume 3 or volume 4 and look at that and not need to read the early ones, because they will collect all of the issues from different Century TV 21 issues and put a whole story together and then give you several different stories in one collection. So each collection gives you a really nice look at a variety of different comics from the various Super Mario Nation shows, as well as UFO, and in some cases Lady Penelope, as you mentioned. And also there is a spin-off called Zero X, which was not its own show on the TV programs, but had its own comic, so that's in there as well.
Okay, as you say, it's interesting stuff. And yes, you're quite right to point out, you can read the entire strips in one volume, as Chris Bentley has collected them in that fashion. So it is rather nice. And the first volume comes with an introduction written by Gerry Anderson himself. And they're quite lovely things, actually, these books. They're large format, beautifully done, I think.
Yes, and they have nice introductions in all of them, which help to set things up and give you some context for these. So it's very nicely put together, actually. The Dalek Chronicles that we mentioned were collected in a book that was put out by Marvel, I believe in the 1990s, and that's quite hard to get a hold of now, and rather expensive, but those are floating around. You may be able to find them somewhere.
Yes, copies do show up on eBay from time to time, and as you say, they're quite pricey now for a collection of what are some beautiful Dalek comics. I presume Marvel owns the rights to those, and quite why they don't put out a new collection. Maybe there's a problem with that in terms of the BBC and the new show. I don't know. However, you can find the Dalek Chronicles on the internet. Should you choose to go and look there, you will find them. And what you will also find is a rather fine YouTube video about the Dalek Chronicles. It's one of a series of documentaries about the Doctor Who comics, which appear on some of the Doctor Who DVD releases, but you can find them all on YouTube. If you look for Doctor Who Stripped for Action, and in particular look at the one about the Dalek Chronicles, which appropriately enough actually begins with a short clip of Gerry Anderson talking about the Dalek comics and the success of the Daleks in Doctor Who.
Yes, the stripped for action series about the Doctor Who comics is really quite good. Those are among the highlights of the extra features on the Doctor Who DVDs.
And you can also find plenty of information about other Gerry Anderson comics on the internet. And in particular, I would mention a very good resource, the Gerry Anderson Complete Comic History site. And I will post the link to that site, as well as a link to the Stripped for Action YouTube documentary. And I'll put those up in the show notes and on the Facebook page.
Okay, so next time we'll look a little bit more at the history of the Gerry Anderson-based comics.
That's right. We'll talk a little bit more about this idea of the shared universe, which was something that was almost only done in the comics. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the stories that resulted from that and get into one of the two of the favourites that we've picked out from these beautiful collections we've been looking at.
Yes, absolutely. And there are some comics that we haven't mentioned at all yet that we will get to those and mention a little bit of their availability too. So there are other things that we'll get into that we haven't talked about yet.
And as ever, we'll finish off with our own recommendations of what you should go out and look for if you're interested, if we've sort of piqued your interest in this stuff. And as ever, if you've looked at this stuff already or you have particular information about Gerry Anderson comics, we'd love to hear from you.
Yes, absolutely. There's lots of stuff to talk about here, and there's some good stuff. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. We are part of the Geek Culture Network, so if you go to TheGeekCultureNetwork.com, you can find us there. We are on Facebook, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our Facebook group.
And you'll also find us on the Voice of Geeks streaming online radio at our regular slot on a Monday and a Tuesday. And as ever, we say hello to our Vogon listeners. And we do have a forum there on their site, so you may also find us there if you don't do the Facebook thing.
Yes, absolutely. So thanks for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. And as ever, we look forward to your company next time. And until then, this is Eamon in England also, signing off.